When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Wardner, and in this episode, I'm joined by chef and now author, Ian Haste. If you were listening to A Pod A Day in May, you may remember an episode I did where I talked about my favourite go-to recipes for nourishing, tasty meals. I know a lot of you made a few of those salads. In that episode, I talked about a book that was coming out in the near future, the premise of which was to create a week's worth of meals from one supermarket visit with zero waste. The book is called 7 Day Basket. The author is Ian Haste, and I'm delighted that he's joining me on this episode to tell me the story of how he came up with such a brilliant idea. I heard about the book quite some time ago, actually, and immediately loved it because I am someone, don't know about you, who does a food shop but never really feels as though I've got everything I need. Like, I'll do the shop, get home, put everything away and think, now what? I consider myself to be a pretty decent cook, but what I tend to do is go to the supermarket, get things I think are healthy and hope that the combination I've chosen will sustain me for as long as possible. But the truth is, it never does, and I'm a pop to the shop kind of a girl every single day, which gets tiresome and boring and expensive. So the idea of being able to fill a single basket with a selection of food that would make a week's worth of meals really appealed to me. And I said it on the podcast back in May, I feel this is the book that I've always needed in terms of cooking and just basically feeding myself. And I know a lot of people got in touch to say they felt it was a brilliant idea too. Some of you may be thinking, Ian Haste, why do I recognise that name? And if you follow me on social media, it's very likely you also follow Nick, his wife, who is one half of Pixie Woo with her sister Sam, who's been on the show twice, and is at Nicola Chapman on Instagram. They have a joint social media account called Haste House, which is well worth a watch, and documents everything from their exercise routines, renovations, and their current topic, slugs and snails. The mind boggles, but anyway, it's fun to watch. Back to the book. And I want to explain why I'm excited about this, just for my own life. When I heard the idea of the book, I was intrigued and excited at the idea because of its practicality. The fact Ian would guide you through the aisles of a supermarket, whether that was in-store or online, and eliminate the dithering. I'm sure we've all done it. You stand there dithering, whether it's calculating price or whatever it might be, but you dither. I do. The idea that via his experience as a chef, he could tell you what to put in a basket that would take any guesswork out of meal planning and the shopping process and just make life easier just was brilliant. I really was like, yes, please, this is what I need. I basically need someone to hold my hand through this. Then this week, I was explaining the book to somebody and I had a bit of a light bulb moment where I realised it's a cookbook that I'm excited about, where the premise isn't about weight loss or eating clean or eating a certain way to lose weight. It's not trying to cheat the system. And I think that's what I've been trying to do with cooking for ages and it hasn't worked. The focus is on nourishing yourself, feeding yourself good, balanced, healthy food, and making meals that you not only enjoy eating, but enjoy making. And then the book arrived, and do you know what happened? I got really excited about making food. I got really excited about making these meals. I got excited about cooking. I read the recipes, I read the instructions, and I just got really giddy about the idea of making this food. So as I record this, there is a supermarket delivery on its way with my very first 7-day basket on the lorry. I chose the light basket, by the way, and I'm pumped. I'm not gonna lie. So in this episode, Ian and I chat about the journey to this book, which isn't a straight road by any stretch of the imagination. There was a career in business development, his time as a chef, taking his chefing to YouTube, and a lot more. And what makes this book so authentic is that this is the food he and his family eats. You just follow that Hayes House account on social to see that. So here he is, making his debut on The Emma Gunn Show. I'm delighted to welcome Ian Hayes. Ian Hayes, I'm very, very, very happy to have you on the show.
Lovely to be here, finally.
Finally, I know. It feels like it was always destined to happen anyway, because Nick's been on a couple of times.
Exactly. I think it's 6 months in the making, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're getting there.
We are getting there. Now, we are talking today primarily because your book, The 7-Day Basket.
Oh, this one here, just here.
The one that is in front of us. And I don't think... genuinely, and it would be a very easy thing to say because you're sitting right in front of me, I don't think I have heard the concept of a book like this and been as excited, because it definitely feels like what I've always needed.
That's so good to hear, because that's essentially exactly what we wanted it to be. We started this concept, it's been a year in the making. Mm-hmm. And when we first came up with the idea, coming to Gleam, the publicist, and sort of putting the idea out there, and it snatched up straight away, and it was quite apparent then that everyone's going to be quite keen to get their hands on this. Mm. So, yeah, it's been the hardest thing, is to actually trying to keep the thing quiet and make sure, in the chef world, it's very clicky. So I've had numerous ideas over the last 5 years, mm-hmm. which you wouldn't believe how many of those have gone into print.
Oh.
Which, if you've got to get there first, basically.
Right.
And that's been with some of the biggest chefs out there. It's hilarious to see how it happens. It's that clicky out there.
Right.
So to keep that quiet for a year has been hard. And I mean, I've had some top chefs saying to me, I'll give you a lovely review and I'll write a nice wording for it, but what's the narrative of the whole book? And I'd be like, nah, I can't tell you. That's been hard.
That is hard. What was the original germ of the idea? Do you remember where you had it?
Yeah, so if we go back, flashback 5 years ago, me and Nick and the kids went to live with my mother-in-law. We were renovating a barn in Heatherset in Norwich, and I need to go back and sort of look, plenty of like work to do on there. So we went back to Nick's mum's, and we started doing food shops at local Tesco Metro, which is like a petrol station with a store on the side, purely mm-hmm. because that's the closest thing mm-hmm. and it was the easiest thing. So I started going in there, and every evening I would see the same group of people. It's next to a university, first of all, so it was like a student group in there. But I'd see the same people on there on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, mm. all buying the same sort of things and mm. putting this eclectic mix in a basket. And then for me, it became very apparent that the days of... I look at food as a chef. Mm. So if I look at a basket of food, I can see 5, 6, 7 meals. Whereas a lot of students, and not just students, but the majority, they look at food groups as in they see a packet of chicken, I'm going to make chicken tonight. They've not thought about Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and mm. Friday. And usually that chicken goes out of date on the Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
So I came up with a concept, really. It was called Student Bible, first of all, which I still think is a genius idea out there, because I still think people could take a student Bible for their first years at university. And they'd get passed on the
book
next
two,
day.
Book two.
But yeah, then we came back and we crashed out ideas here, and that's where we come up with the 7-day basket.
And so the zero waste thing is part of it, isn't it? It's like it's shopping clever. And I know I remember the first time I did an online shop, it arrived and I unpacked it, and then I was just like, that's very dissatisfying. I don't actually feel like I've got anything. There's food in the house, but I haven't got meals.
That's it, because you've gone through and ordered things in individual forms.
Mm.
Now, as I said earlier, when a chef looks at food groups, they look at as many things they put together. Mm. Which hopefully, if you take this shopping list to the shops, everything's in aisle order. You can go around the shops in dairy, meats, tins, spices, so on. Fill your basket up, go home, and you've not got that whole problem that you get with so many cookbooks where you get halfway through a recipe and it says, add sumac. And you're like, well, I haven't got sumac. haven't got any saffron. Do you know what I mean? So you leave that recipe. So hopefully people will use that, go home and make sure they can use it for the whole 7 days.
And I remember, I think Nick was saying on stories a while ago that you went round lots of supermarkets and actually tested out the theory. And like, if I go to this supermarket and if I go to that one, if it's a metro, if it's a big mega store, can I still achieve the same thing?
Yeah, because essentially, if you work out how supermarkets are and the way a shopping list works, we try and do things in a fruit order, don't we? Or a veg order, meats, dairy, fish, tinned, breads, eggs, frozen. That's pretty much how they work, isn't it? Because I've tested it too many times. So yeah, they're done in aisle order, just so that there's nothing worse than getting to the end and going, I forgot some grapes. Not that there's grapes in any recipes, in any of the book.
And you approach it, you said you think about it as a chef. So let's talk about your chefing background, because this was... Maybe we should come on to it, because if we go back a little bit further, this wasn't what you were doing 15 years ago.
No, so let's go back. So I've just turned 43. So 23 years ago, I was a head chef at a local pub. Started off with pulling pints, washing the bottles, doing just general kitchen stuff, really. There was a couple of lunchtime services where I helped out cooking, and then one day the head chef called in sick. I thought, well, do you know what? I can do this. I've got enough knowledge now. I've done about six or seven sort of like stints in the kitchen. I thought, you know, let's have a little go. It was a quiet lunchtime, so I had a go at cooking basically, and held my own. I did something like 20 covers, I think it was, and then I worked my way up, and we started doing about 150 covers. So it was a biggie restaurant, and then I realised it wasn't for me. I love cooking and I love the passion behind it, but the reality of it is really hard work, and it's really hard work to earn a lot of money from it, because you're doing so many hours, and it becomes your whole life. So I went back to what I studied at college, which was information technology, and then I took that approach back to, you know, looking for different work within that sort of avenue. So I got contacted, I landed a job with an American print and software company, huge company, and I was a business development manager for them. And I worked and commuted to London for the best part of 10 years. Travelling backwards and forwards. And then forward on a few more years, myself and my wife works away with her work quite a lot. So we watch our kids. And it was quite apparent at the time that me commuting backwards and forwards to London just wasn't going to give a child the best future, or I'm not going to see much of the child.
Because talk about, just for commuting, this isn't just a long commute. This is over 4 hours in a car every day.
Yeah, it was pretty bonkers. But you know, but then I was a young lad. Like, you know, I had a nice car and a good living. I was so career hungry that I wanted to get as high as I could at that business. And I did it. You know, I got as high as I could possibly get within that sort of avenue, without going to directorship or so on. But it was ridiculous. It was a lot of work. So, yeah, we decided that we were going to have our little boy, Harry. And I said to Nick, I'm going to jack in my job, which was probably the most weird feeling in the world. Yeah, I'm going to be a home dad. That seems like a good idea. But we were very, very confident Nick's career was really bounding at this point. So I thought, you know, we're comfortable. We can do this. It's fine. So I started being a home dad. And then it got to a stage, I thought, what can I do from home that would keep me so that, you know, we're from a family of YouTubers where I'm not a YouTuber as such, but I come from a family of them. So I knew what they were doing as to set it up. And I knew there was new ideas still out there 5 years ago, probably not so much now, but it was a time when basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to have a little go at doing some health food online. Now this was pre Deliciously Ella, so there was nothing online. Jamie was doing comfort food, the hairy bikers were doing pies and their pasties and their, you know, gaining weight sort of thing. And I thought, well, there was nothing really online which worked as with my ethos, which was really much, I suppose the word then was clean eating, which I hate the word now, but it's because it got trashed by media. So I thought, I'm going to do a few healthy eating videos and put them online, see how it goes. And it got really good hits. That was really weird. And they're terrible videos. Never watched my first videos.
You know that when you're saying don't go and watch them.
You will watch them. Yeah. It's like my little fresh face in a kitchen, just terrible mic, terrible sound. It was just, it's pretty bad. But yeah, lo and behold, it got hits. And you know, I would say, partly because I'm coming from a family, so it was expected for it to do okay, maybe. And then I got asked to do a job for Asda, for Mum's Eye View. And it was Nick and Sam to be in the kitchen, and I was going to be the chef, like Saturday kitchen, and come and cook for them. And I loved it. Because I realised then, actually, I can cook, And I can present, because I presented for business development for the best part of 10 years, so I can stand up and talk to anyone, absolutely fine. And so then it sort of clicked to me, hang on a second, why don't I just be a chef presenter? Why don't I just combine the two?
Mm.
So I went back home, invested in more cameras and more gear, all the gear, no idea, and set about doing some videos. And from there, it spiraled, really. Mm. I had Jamie Oliver got in contact after 2 months, offered me a contract within, he had this thing called, he's had a food network, basically, which was called, just throwing a blank there, am I?
That's all right. We can't be expected to remember everything.
Food Tube. There we go. Don't know why that completely erased itself from my memory. Always when you put a microphone in front of me. He had this, he basically ring-led all the up-and-coming chefs within the country, from people in pastry through to people in salads, people in health, which I came into that bubble in. And he ring-led them all into this circle and started this beautiful thing called Food Tube. But I thought at the time, Mr. I-Know-It-All, I'm going to be all right. I've got an idea here and it's going really well. So I went alone and just did it myself and didn't earn any money for like 2 years. But it was. I knew there was an idea there. And I knew if with YouTube, if you have an idea and you stand by it, it will work out. If you're just doing it for just trying to, you know, make lots of money, it's you're never going to get there. You need to have a trade there and such. So I suppose that's where we ended up to modern day, really. It's all just gone crazy.
And the thing that I want to unpick here, because it's... the listeners won't be surprised, is it's this work ethic. Like when you talk about working in business software development and doing the presenting, you mentioned just almost quite off the cuff, you know, I worked my way up. And so I wonder if you are a goal setter, if you're somebody who, do you enjoy the graft? Do you like, I don't mind coming in on the bottom rung and I'm going to earn every step to get to where I want to be?
Yeah, I think my whole family say that I've always been a grafter. I've taken so many different directions in my life work-wise. It's only because, I don't know if it's, I want to do the best, but I definitely give everything 100%. And I think one of the funniest things that I did is when my mother-in-law wanted to move house a year ago. Yeah, a year and a bit ago, she wanted to move house. And I said to her, she couldn't find anything she wanted. Sadly, she'd lost her partner. So she wanted to downgrade a house, and she wanted something with character, but modern, and also within a budget, and also be easy to maintain, and it'd be local to the shops. And it had this huge area of scope, which was never going to get what she wanted, really.
It was a property unicorn, wasn't it?
It was a unicorn, yeah. It was made out of dodo feathers. But we found this property, which was sort of like, it was modernist, oldie, sort of outside. And she said that she wanted to get it. I said, look, it's not going to be big enough for you as it is, but what I'll do is I'll build you an extension off the back and take the walls out, and I'll convert the kitchen into this beautiful sort of like church sort of like kitchen, and I'll take 6 months off work and I'll go and get it for you. Because she couldn't afford it in a budget, so I wanted to try and make sure she could. So lo and behold, I put the digger to work and got it spades into the ground, started digging the trenches out, started pouring the concrete, and then I got my book deal. And I said they want the book in 7 months. And I was just like, ha. Okay, this is going to be a fun one. So I was, I was building the house and then writing the book, and then building the house and writing the book of an evening, basically.
Do you think that actually made both projects a bit more interesting?
No, it made, I don't know how I've got a wife, if I'm honest with you. I really do think that Nick, okay, she thought I was an amazing guy because I was building her mum a house, but she also thought I was absolutely mental trying to write a book at the same time. And I suppose that's where that work ethic comes from. I think there's always been, I kind of like to help everyone, which is a bit of my downfall, but also that's my character.
Why is it a downfall?
Well, I don't know, because you can sometimes take too much on.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you know what I mean. And you always want to be the best at what you can do. Not competitive. Wife and, will say opposite.
But take too much on and give of yourself rather than looking after yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that was the hardest 7 months I think I've had for a long while.
And did you have, because you didn't have any experience of writing a book, did you have any experience of laying foundations and building extensions?
Yeah. So I've renovated houses for, I suppose I've done 5 now. So yeah, I can tile, I can do electrics, I can do plumbing. I can do basic block work. I can sort of get by. So, yeah, I can do most things on the house.
Do you like to be able to, like, you wouldn't pay somebody to do that? You're like, I want to know how to do it.
Yeah, I've got this weird temperament where, I think Nick's the same as well. My wife's the same. She wants to learn things. But if I want to do something, I want to study it and learn it through and through.
Yeah.
Because I always say, you get a plumber in, but they just bend a bit of pipe and put water through it. And that sounds really, really, but that in its limited form is what they do.
Yeah.
Now, going beyond the electrics and that, but they do bend pipe and put water through it and connect them. Well, I've done bric-a-brac. Sorry to all the plumber listeners. Oh, dear. But I'd like to think that you can have a go at, what's the point of not having a go at something? And usually you can learn it if you have a good couple of goes.
Yeah.
If you saw my first properties, they were really bad.
Really?
Yeah.
They've fallen down now.
Terrible, terrible places. And I felt bad the moment I sold them, but yeah.
I'm curious, what kind of a learner were you at school?
Good. Good for my first 9 years.
Mm.
Then not so good. I was in set A for absolutely everything and worked my way down to... Like within a year, I just destroyed myself the first year as at high school. So yeah, academically beforehand, I was great. I did my first year at school before going to school.
Yeah.
Did fine all the way through high school. And I had fun.
I just think it's interesting with learners. You're a bit like me in that if you can figure out how to do it, you would like to do it rather than get someone else to do it.
Absolutely.
Or if someone else is doing it, you will watch right on their shoulder so that you can do it yourself next time.
I bet you did it with the podcast, didn't you?
Totally.
Yeah. YouTube videos?
All day long, all saved as bookmarks. All of the ones, like, how do I upload a podcast?
That's the thing with YouTube. You never take your car in. If you've got a little warning light now, what do? Google it.
Yeah.
I can do that myself. I can just reset it quickly.
That's very true. That's very true. So...
Anyway, we digress.
We digress a bit. No, it's fine. It's all good. Please tell me about being a chef doing 150 covers. Was it a gastropub?
Yeah.
You work there full time.
Yeah.
You don't know how to come around to this question, but I've worked in restaurants as a waitress back in the day, and most of the chefs were a bit douchey, in a very warm and lovely...
douchey way.
Yeah, like they earned their douche status. It was all good fun and games. But you don't seem like a...
No, there was no douchiness at all. Well, I think that's definitely changed.
Yeah.
22 years ago, we had the Ramsay sort of like nightmares, and it was like very much... structured to, if you got to head chef, that you'd always not bully, but that your sous chefs and your under chefs would always get the crappy jobs and they'd get the shouted at, I think. But no, there was never like that in the kitchen, because I looked at it was a gastro pub, so it wasn't really rocket science. It was, you know, there was a lot of Blake's food there, so there was certainly microwave stuff going on. There was certainly some dings, and it wasn't over complex, if you know what I mean. Anything that was over complex didn't really stress you out. So yeah, I think it's just be nice to people, isn't it?
True. I'm just projecting onto you my experience.
There's a lot of douche, but now, you know, these days it's not like that. The chef world is very, very different. There's a massive amount of respect out there, and I think people respect the chefs for what they can do. And there's a lot more. You don't get a Michelin star if you've got an angry chef community like area. Mm. It has to be very much loving and supportive and getting people up to the skill level that they need.
Because the kitchens have become quite visible, like you say, with reality shows, people like Gordon Ramsay.
Definitely.
Do you think that contributed to the change?
100%. I think it's detrimental to your workforce. If you've got a stressed workforce, stressed waitress, stressed barman, you know, taking food backwards and forwards, and you've got to look at that and think to yourself, well, hang on a second, how am I going to make this a warmer environment for the guest, essentially? And that's a cog that all goes together to make sure that plate of food goes through the kitchen and goes out to a nice, happy waitress or waiter.
So you create these recipes, you create these shopping lists. So now you're quite hands-off with the food delivery system in the sense of you give the instructions. What of you is in the book in terms of the recipes? What's like very signature Ian?
Everything's signature. So basically, the book is seasonal. And when I mean by seasonal, I don't mean every single food item in there. But what I hope to do is that it's weather dependent. So the book tells a little bit of a story. So the start of the book starts with January, February, March. So historically, the human being eats with their feelings. So we look outside and see a wet, rainy, cold day. We go for heartier type food. Forward onto the summer months, and you've got this beautiful sort of sunshiny day. You don't want to be eating a beef bourguignon casserole or do you know what I mean? A Maldivian curry. You want to be eating something that's going to be sort of like lighter and fresher. So if you open the book at the middle, you're straight into your lovely salad-y type things. Open the end, start drifting back towards that sort of Christmassy time. And then on that level again, this book is exactly how I eat.
Right.
Really. So it's got meat-free Monday, which is kind of a big trend thing at the moment anyway. You've got two or three different sort of vegetarian dishes the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. And then we steer back to how we do as a culture. So we want to have our takeaway meals on Fridays and Saturdays. Mm. So I've done healthy Middle Eastern kebabs. I've done the beef rendang for a Saturday night. So two sort of curry kebab-y type things. And then every Friday and Saturday is like that throughout the book.
Yeah.
And then go on to a Sunday. I've always said when I had my boy, Harry, that every Sunday we sit down for a Sunday roast. And that's happened every Sunday, within reason, for the last 7 years. And I think that's how we now, as families, certainly, and couples, on a Sunday is that heartier roast sort of meal. So every Sunday throughout the book is things like giant toad in the hole. It's got things like rack of lamb with braised cabbage. It's got roast pork. It's got a roasty type dish every Sunday. And that was really important to me because that's how I eat. And then also the knock-on effect of that is that I personally don't like having sandwiches for lunch. I don't really like the stodgy aspect and the fact it makes you feel quite slowed down in the middle of the day, which is the time of the day you want to get that peak of energy. So within the book itself, there's quite a few of those where it's teamed up to make you seven recipes, obviously two portions of each per evening. But most of those will have a leftover, if it's a leftover microwavable dish. Obviously sea bass and noodles isn't, so that's just done in portion control. But things like there's a, we've got beef bourguignon in there with some charred cabbage. We've got some sausage cassoulet, which is, all of those are more hearty, but beautiful heated up the next day. And how much better is your lunchbox going to be when you get to work and you have this, I don't know, the Maldivian chicken curry with rice and your mate's got his Wool's hot dog and a shitty ass sandwich.
So what if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, Ian, I can't even spell beef bourguignon, let alone cook it. How have you made these recipes? What's the skill level? Are they organised by different skill levels or can anyone make all of them?
Okay, so I run a YouTube channel, which I listen to my viewers completely. So I ask them, first of all, what are their staples? Everyone, you probably have staples. Probably sure it's going to be spaghetti bolognese. It's going to be fish and chips one of those days. It's going to be mac and cheese maybe. Lasagna. What was the other one which came up really common? Oh, it's curry. So they're your five staples, which nearly, I did a poll on YouTube and Instagram and said, give me your five staples, okay? Because I want to understand how complex they were going to be or how easy they were going to be and whether or not they should go in the book. And 100% they have. Because if you leave, as a chef, I don't really want to be making spaghetti bolognese. Because I could do a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But it has to make the book, and I've tweaked all of those recipes because it has to make the book, because that's, I'm listening to the viewers, and they're the easier type recipes they want to do. So from that basis, we then worked on the fact that I wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be 20-minute meals. There are 20-minute meals in there, plenty of them, but that is something which we're losing within our culture, whereas we want to rush everything in the kitchen. The kitchen's very much, for me, as an enjoyable zone. So I've written the recipes so that even the ones which take 2.5-3 hours, it takes you 10 minutes to put the dish together.
Right.
So you're not stressing about, oh God, I've got to sit here for 3 hours. You put that dish together, put it in the oven whenever you want. You can still enjoy that same time, but it's important for me to know that you're going to get the most beautifully created dish way better than what it is to do it in 20 minutes. You've got taste, you've got meat breaking down, you've got all the things that happen when you give it a little bit of love, a little bit of time. So speedy things do work for the busy people that are home, but also the slow and a little bit of love things really work as well.
It's lingering on it, isn't it? You're bringing it back to sort of, not food theatre, but like enjoyment of it, as you say, not just kind of quick packages and eating the second that you walk in the front door. It's like, actually, I'm gonna, and is it about, for you, and we've talked about this on the podcast before with other guests, about the nurturing element of food, like you say, bringing that back? So actually it's a form of self-care in the same way taking time and attention on your food and how you prepare it and how you shop is almost the same as the work that you do in the gym or the time that you take to make sure that you rest every week.
Absolutely. I think we've lost somewhere over the last, I believe, the last 20 years, our way of cooking as a family and getting people in the kitchen, getting people to cook things from scratch. I think Jamie Oliver's done one of the best jobs because you watch how he is with his children. And I think that's really apparent nowadays, which kids don't have a clue about how to put things together. And that's us. That's us. That's us. Our, our age group that have started that. And it's something which I'm really keen to change, to sort of see, you know, this element back in our kitchen. It hasn't always got to be this rushed what's for dinner affair. It's more like, hang on a second, we can all be involved with that process. It's kind of nice to get the kids making their own breads, get them making their own pizzas, because they'll bloody well eat it if they make it. That's the thing.
Yeah. And with the book, is it a case of you know what you're going to be eating for the 7 days ahead, because obviously you've shopped for it? And when I thought about that, I thought genuinely, I don't think I've ever, in my 41 and a half years, ever thought about food that far in advance.
Well, this is the thing. I'm going to open the book now, so this is no good for the podcast, but I want to give you an idea of how I structured this. So we've got warming, we've got round the world, we've got relaxed, we've got spicy, variety, comforting, summer, twist, veggie and light. They're all different weeks. So I like to think that you can go and think, what do I feel about on a Sunday? I'm going to do a food shop tomorrow. What should I get? And you and your partner or whatever you are can just go say, right, let's have a bit of a spicy week. Yeah?
I want to
have a bit of a light week. I want to have a bit of a relaxed week. They're quicker recipe weeks. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So hopefully that's what you get from the book.
Yeah.
And hopefully this is ever evolving, because I'd like to do many more of the 7 day basket.
Yes.
That'd be the plan.
So how many weeks are there in there? Seven?
There's seven, yeah.
I mean...
So there's 10 weeks.
Oh, so you...
Yeah.
That's what... That's brilliant. That's 3 months, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so you've got enough. And then in 3 months' time, you want to buy another book. Headline, yeah. If you're listening.
Yeah, so you're going to have to... And then as you're writing the second book, you can, I don't know...
Build
another house. You are also, you've talked about it, you have Hayes House on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So we get to see inside your beautiful kitchen. Mm-hmm. I really like the drawers.
The apothecary drawers.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a funny story for that.
Go on.
Well, I'm not sure if it's that funny, actually. I just tell it and think it's funny myself. It's just more annoying. So when I was living back at my mother-in-law's, I was converting the house at the same time. And I really like the idea of these haberdashery counter cabinets. And there's a place in London called Paper Mill Studios. And beautiful apothecary drawers. And this beautiful workshop. So I'm going to have that in my kitchen. I'll keep it a nice little secret. It's going to be my filming kitchen. So I want to make sure it looks really nice on camera. It looks really quirky and cool. So I contacted this guy to get it made. He drew it all up for me. Priced it all up. Started getting it made. Started putting it in the kitchen. And then... It started to get built. So then me and Nick went back home to mother-in-law's and we're watching Jamie's, this is his show, must be about 3 years ago now. And he was filming in Paper Mill Studios.
No.
Yeah. And then the very last shot was the pan out from him to these apothecary drawers with him just sat there in front of them, just like this. And I was like, everyone's going to think I've copied his drawers. So I sent Jamie a message, a picture of these drawers, and show him what I've had done. And he goes, how would you even know that? Because this was filmed so much more in advance. I said, because I found this studio called Paper Mills. Is that where you were filming? And he went, yep. So like, what are all the chances? So I've got copy drawers, basically.
Do you feel, that seems like a bit of a theme. You have an idea ahead of the curve.
Yes, annoying.
Is it, though?
Yeah. Oh, no, I have an idea ahead of the curve usually, and then someone brings it out before me. But that's why I'm so glad to get the first Zero Waste cookbook out there.
Yeah. So Zero Waste, it is about the fact that, I mean, I do it all the time. It's usually bags of pre-made salad that they just...
But if you're clever when you shop, that salad will last you 7 days, easily.
How do I do that?
Just put it in the colder section of your fridge. Especially what you want to do is adapt your temperature. It has controls. Freezes your friends. You know, this is what I talk about in the book many times, that we've lost our chest freezers. We've lost these things which we used to hide and try and get to the bottom of as kids. You know, get your things in your freezer as soon as possible, and then you're not going to get any wastage. Use your fish up early or freeze it and follow the book. Get the book. Buy the book.
Buy the book. Zero Waste, buy the book.
Yeah.
You are also very healthy and you're into fitness. Mm-hmm. And I said to you before we started recording that Nick's form and her burpees makes me very, very jealous. And usually when she puts videos up of you guys doing them, I then just go into her DM swearing because she just does so many and makes it look very, very easy. Fitness is obviously a huge part of things too. And I feel like nowadays a conversation about food kind of goes hand in hand with how you look after yourself in terms of fitness or exercise.
Certainly. I've trained since I was 20, so I've had on and off patches where I've got a lot bigger or a lot smaller, but it's really important to me. Certainly with Nick was diagnosed with MS the best part of 7 years ago now. 6 years ago now, sorry. 6 years ago now. And so it was really apparent then that fitness had to be upped a little bit for her as well. And not to say that Nick wasn't fit, but she didn't have the best diet and she didn't really train that much. And now we are moving on, you know, this 6 years later, and she's so fit. It's ridiculous. And we both train every day.
Yeah, and you had, so you'd already moved into the cooking full time at this point, and then Nick gets diagnosed, and when she came on the podcast, she talked about, you know, she eats a bag of kale a day because she absolutely loves it. And so there's an element with you as well where you really did do your research in terms of, how do I keep my wife healthy? How do I look after her based on what will work for her? Mm-hmm. What kind of rules and changes did you make to the diet to accommodate that?
Well, first of all, that sort of knock to your system and your family life is probably one of the most hardest things you ever have to deal with, because you've got to see your wife suddenly going through this, what if, what's going to happen? Mm. You know, and she was in such an amazing part of her career, still is, luckily, that you instantly think you don't care about anything else in this world apart from making that woman the mother of your children as well as possible, whatever it takes. Mm. So we looked into all sorts. And luckily, I had quite a lot of knowledge. I lost my auntie to multiple sclerosis when I was 30. So I knew a lot about it. I knew about the different variations that you can have. So there was lots that I could put out there to Nick to make sure that she understood that things are going to be okay, but we're not sure what's going to happen progression-wise, really. Mm. So we went in to see, we looked at loads of people online. We looked at TED Talks. We looked at Terry Walls. He's a phenomenal doctor out there who really turns medicine on its head and shows that she was probably the first person to talk about gut health. And this is 6 years ago. Mm. You know, no one knew anything about gut health. All papers on gut health have been written in the last 2 years.
Really?
So, yeah, this woman is pretty up there on her knowledge. And she talks about eating brassicas and greens and kales and broccolis in a larger form, in an uncooked, cooked ways, and what it does for your body and how it works with the brain. And how you've got a small amount of brain in your gut. Mm. And that little piece of brain basically triggers how you digest your food, how it comes through. It decides when it's going to go into its different pocketed areas. Mm. And it was quite apparent then that, hang on a second, she's got something here. She was out of a wheelchair by now and walking around and looking healthy and fit and eating these foods. Now, a lot of these foods I wouldn't particularly want to eat. I don't want to eat liver every day. I'm not a big fan of offal, and nor was Nick. So we had to be realistic, but we looked at all the things that we knew that we could get into our diet that I could turn into how was I cook as a chef anyway.
Right.
Which is how Toad in the Hole was our thing. We had giant Toad in the Hole with spelt flour and a bag of kale every day with a sweet potato for, which you would eat it 3 times a week, really. And so it was a case of just working with what we knew to make sure that we could sort of improve our health with fitness as well. And we went to go and see someone in London who's probably one of the best, I'm not sure what his word is, what he'd be. He's not a nutritionist, but he knows how to test anything that's imbalanced in your body.
Right.
And that's generally what any of these things is, certainly with autoimmune. It's an imbalance. So it's triggering something in your nervous system to attack rather than settle.
Mm.
So yeah, we went in to have a scan, and sure enough, there was lesions on the brain. And from that day, Nick knew she had it anyway, because her dad sadly passed with an MS. So we set about a diet structure for her, which she stuck to like you wouldn't believe. She pretty much stopped drinking straight away, drinks gallons of water every day. We put in a zip tap, which is like the filtration system, so that the best water you can get. And then worked on her diet. And yeah, I suppose from there, you know, she went to hospital and turned down standard medicine, which is a cancer drug basically in its truest form, and said, let's give this a go. Let's not take the drugs. Let's see what 6 months brings. Because remittance, MS remittance basically can mean that you have an attack and you might lose, say, her eyesight for the day. Or for a month, or 2 months, or 6 months, or 9 months. But usually you go back to a percentage of what you had before.
Right.
That might be not minimal, so you might only get 93%, which is what she had come back. But that was a better risk than taking a cancer drug, which we have got no idea what it's doing, apart from stopping the MS slightly.
Right.
Stopping the MS is not always the best thing if it's doing a lot of other things in the background, which is damaging to your body. So yeah, that's where we went. I remember was coming back from the hospital that night, and we wrote down recipes, and we stuck to it. Like, left, just there was no straying from that at all. Obviously, she could have her enjoyment. She likes her chocolate occasionally. And she has, you know, occasional sort of like food that she's not that great for her. But other than that, she is regiment with it, really. And I suppose that's how it carried through to the book.
Yeah.
You know, I can't call it a health book because it's not. It's a balanced book.
I like that.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not into just it being this strict regime of, you know, there's so many books out there where it's like five ingredients and it's just like, well, that's all very well, but I'm about taste and enjoying things, not overeating, but keeping my fitness up.
Well, this is the thing. It's the balance, and it is a healthy book because you're nourishing yourself really well. And I guess the component parts mean that you're getting what you need of your carbs and what you need of your proteins, what you need of your fats and everything.
Yeah.
Plus a load of greenery. I'm curious, when you started to see the diet having an impact, that must have been, you talked about, you know, obviously wanting to do anything to make her well. That must have been quite powerful. Did you develop a new relationship with kind of food and what you put on your plate and how you prepare things when you could actually see it having a positive impact?
Yeah, 100%. So for Nick, it was really trying to boost her greens. So that was kind of the easiest thing, is if you can do that and make things taste nice, it was quite easy. Because kale by itself is quite bland, isn't it? And quite woody. So we started putting white wine and a bit of honey in there, and instantly it tastes lovely. So I think from there it was more, I started culturing my recipes, I suppose, a little bit around what we both want to eat, if that makes sense. So I started doing way healthier curries with like literally four bags of spinach in it, and it wilts down to nothing. So you do a chicken sag. So it's in the book. But yeah, that sort of thing. And yeah, you start writing your recipes around what's going to make you feel better. But Nick, you said about sort of like, how do I feel about when she started to feel better? That wasn't really apparent for quite a long time.
Right.
We kind of knew we were doing the right thing, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It was a massive gamble that we put on ourselves, that is an attack going to happen? We don't know. But we worked on, there's something called you knowing your hits, basically. So you know your nose. So if you start getting really hot, you start getting sort of tingly hands and things, you know then to sort of like stop.
Right.
So we worked on all those bases so that she was always in this controlled environment where she knew how things were going to go to make her feel better.
Mm-hmm.
She has to sleep loads more. So she would sleep. I would do the night shift with the kids every night for pretty much 5 years. So I knew that that's her sleep time. And then we start going back to see our guy in London. And that's when we start seeing the difference. So you do these tests on your finger, which is basically putting electrodes for your hands, which monitors livers, kidneys, fats, proteins, everything that goes on in your system. And it's kind of an old method, but you have this thing where you want to try and get it down to 50-50 and 100%. And Nick's was so far off the radar, first of all. But taking her supplements and eating her food, you could just watch these two areas just slowly closing in. You think, so, Christ, this is working. And her energy just suddenly, like that, just went up. And she was suddenly like, being told never to squat in the gym again, which was her passion, to lift heavy weights. And she's so hardcore with those sort of things. To suddenly to say to someone, no, you can't do it, was, that trashed her. They haven't made it so hard. And then suddenly she was in the gym, squatting racks, like doing burpees, 100 burpees a day. What's that about? Talk about one extreme to the other.
That's made me feel tired, even you just saying the words. And her form is perfect.
Yeah.
I'm sort of interested about the coping here, just because we all have like information that can knock us. And it does seem to be that you're just very optimistic and go, right, well, what can we do? This is an obstacle, but what can we do? Has that always been the case?
I think that's a case of both of us bounce off each other like that. I'm not always like that. I can be quite negative in some ways, certainly. But that's when we both work really well together, because we both have that sort of idea of saying, well, if Nick's going to be negative, I'm going to be negative. We look for a solution around it,
right?
Rather than both being like that,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah,
but I'm not always the confident sort of outgoing person.
No, but I know exactly what you mean. But sometimes I just think it's that the muscle memory of just going, okay, this is bad, but now we shall be positive.
Yeah, I think you always have to look like that in illness as well, don't you?
Yeah, and also just even from the sense of like the commute, the building the house, the writing the book, it's like, well, let's meet this challenge head on. That's the theme that I'm definitely getting from you. Can we talk about nutrition and kids? Because obviously you have two gorgeous kids. I was going to call them babies then, but they're not babies.
Not babies anymore. It's crazy.
Do you have any rules, or do you have anything nutrition-wise that you really stand by in terms of feeding children?
Yeah. Don't force it into them, personally. Mm-hmm. I've always found with mine, if you get them involved, they will eat it.
Mm.
And that is its simplest form. If they make something, they will eat it. If you put three veggies out, they'll eat one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you put one veggie on the plate, they won't eat the veg.
Mm.
If you put seven out, they'll eat three. Guess what? Put eight on, they'll eat four.
Mm.
So that's the way I've always worked out from Harry when he was like first starting to, you know, weaning him onto his sort of like solids. We'd put a roast dinner down in front of him. So all the different veggies you've got, so like braised cabbage, broccoli, peas, runner beans, all these different textures and colours in front of him. And it, for him, it was just like, it's like a playground for him.
Yeah.
It's not just green.
Yes.
All these vibrances, all these colours of the rainbow in front of him. So he's just like, wow, bit of gravy on there. And he would just plonk away and eat it.
Yeah.
Then we did that with meatballs, and we did it with pastas, and we did it with other food groups. And as long as he was busy with it and there was lots going on, we could then pick out the elements of what he liked.
Mm.
And then I wasn't going to make him eat things he didn't like, because there's no real point. So I think with nutrition, it's really important to overload them with things and then working out what they like.
Mm.
Because the variety is the best thing to give them.
Yeah.
And that definitely works with kids.
I like the idea of giving them a rainbow of choice.
Mm, absolutely. And those different textures and flavours, and cook them in different things. So al dente, or do them in soft.
Mm.
So they can understand, you know, different textures.
Yeah. If you had like your top three or your top five pieces of cooking advice, shall we say, what would they be? Whether that's about how you shop, but obviously you've got the book for that, but just in terms of your advice for cooking, if somebody feels like, listen to this, as I did when I heard about the book, I thought, God, I don't really think I've ever actually thought about like my shop or what I'm cooking. I just sort of go with what's in.
I think the first thing I have to say is just look at your fridge as your friend. Make sure you understand where everything goes, keep everything aligned, and keep everything that you've opened either go straight back into the freezer or keep it towards the front. So
right.
Visibly you know that that's not going to go out of date or waste. And then I would say, as far as cooking's concerned, I'm a big believer is get everything ready first of all. Yeah, don't start going through it and just getting bits and pieces and adding it when it needs it. Get everything ready so it's all in front of you, and it's going to be so much more structured and quick.
Like a cookery program where you've got your... Yeah.
Have it there, have it prepped up. Just use your chopping board with your meat, chopping board with all your spices and your herbs and veg. Just add them as you need. Have it all chopped and done. It makes it so much more enjoyable.
Really?
Have your glass of wine then, can't you? And just enjoy it. You're not stressing about everything.
Are there any ingredients? I know obviously you've got the 7-day basket, but are there any core ingredients that people should have in their house all the time, come what may?
Okay, so it was really important for me to write 3 pages on spices. So I'm a firm believer, I buy 2 spices a week. And it's a regular thing. I have a big spice drawer in that apothecary drawers. But as far as I was concerned, is that if you add 2 herbs and spices to your basket each week, at the end of the year, you'll have enough herbs and spices to make pretty much any dish you want if you use a tomato base or a coconut milk base, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really important to me, to make sure that you get, I don't know what it is, but people just have like thyme, tarragon, these basic herbs, dried herbs at home. Why not just buy all these powdered? We've got this massive influx in this country now over the last 5 years where all these beautiful spices are coming over.
Mm.
Get them in your cupboard and get using them.
And a dried spice is okay?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, dried spice is absolutely fine.
I thought you were going to throw the book at me.
No, absolutely sure. Fine. I would only use them in certain things, but I would prefer to use fresh.
Mm.
But for things like your turmeric, there's so many different dried spices. I have a cupboard full of them.
Mm.
Yeah, brilliant.
You've got the book, obviously, but like, let's be realistic. We have to sometimes eat on the hop.
Mm-hmm.
What about eating from shops, the high street, like pre-packaged food? Do you have any sage advice? Obviously, you're not coming from a place of eating clean or like being super healthy. You're just coming from a place of nourishing yourself really well.
Speed, you mean?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? I challenge people on this, to be honest, quite often. I think I can make a chicken curry in 15 minutes.
Mm.
What does it take to heat up? What, 6-7 minutes?
Mm.
Rice is 4 minutes. So yeah, I always think I'd never buy a prepackaged food.
Really?
Saying that, I have bought prepackaged mashed potato.
We'll forgive you.
Just for laziness. For the kids.
But have you then zhuzhed it up? Have you then like grated something on it?
I put milk and cheese in there. It's for the boy.
get him nice and big and strong. But what about things like someone who's listening to this who hasn't got their packed lunch with them at work, and they're going to go out and they're going to buy something at lunchtime? Do you pay much attention to what you can get on the high street? It feels like there's a load more variety and choice than ever before, but is it like, is it decent, or is it actually better to prioritise cooking your own?
No, you're in London, so you have... I would probably not bring a packed lunch, but I would go out and buy something from, you know, one of the regular stores. But I'd probably always have curry and rice. That's my absolute lunchtime thing. And I never frown on anyone for having that for their lunch.
I was going to ask, actually, what's your favourite meal to cook? But I wonder whether you've just given me the answer.
I love my roast dinners on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. As I say, I do them every Sunday.
We may need to ask about your gravy, actually.
My cheats gravy or my normal gravy?
Well, just the gravy that I keep seeing on Instagram stories that did make me...
That's cheats gravy.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is... So if you want to make really quick gravy, it's in the book. Let's keep plugging that book.
The link to buy will be in the show notes, listeners.
Cheats gravy is 3 cloves of garlic into a pan, half a bottle of red wine, 2 large sprigs of rosemary, boiling water to the top of the pan, and just a standard, like, normal gravy granule. Oh, and 1 beef stock pot. Whisk it together. Don't put your gravy granules in yet. Reduce it to about 3/4, then add your gravy granules. And it will taste nothing like a crappy bisto.
Because
it's infused with garlic and the rosemary and the red wine, and it reduces down and it gets thicker, and it's just like, you'd never know.
Do you put the garlic in whole and then mash them in? And
don't mash it.
No.
No, just leave it to do its thing. The rosemary will scent all the way through it. It will taste like rosemary, garlic, red wine gravy.
Oh.
You'll be like, what? How's that happen? But make it in a bigger batch. So a big saucepan. Don't be scared about making it big, because it's got to be big, to get the reduction on it, and then stir in your granules right at the end. It's just a thickener, that's all it is.
Yeah, I believe gravy, like, my food swims in it. When I make gravy, it's like I make 2 or 3 pints.
Yeah, I want it down my chin. Yeah. Absolutely. I want a white shirt that's absolutely ruined.
Well, I mean, I try to eat it all right,
no,
but I
don't.
Just like a
no,
big boat of gravy. What else do we need to ask about the book? Because I am excited about it. I do think, as I said, when I first heard about it, I thought, I've never strategically shopped. I always go in and think about, what would I like? What do I fancy? What's on offer?
But that's fine to do that. I think it's good to see what's on offer as well. But, you know, most of these things in the book can be swapped out. You know, most of the chicken can be swapped out for anything else that you want to use, you know, dairy or meat-free options. Yeah, I think it's important to do that and then just walk through with a little shopping list.
Right, so...
It's going to change your life.
I genuinely am going to live and die by the book. Hopefully, well, just hopefully live by it.
Best just to live by it for now, really, till book two.
Because I really want to try it out, because I haven't, like I said, this is an experiment I've never tried. Any other book I've ever bought about food has always been with the view of... losing weight or eating a new way, which is never sustainable. And this is what really appeals to me about this, is it's a sustainable way of eating, because it's not restrictive.
Absolutely.
And it's, we know the pleasure center gets activated when we eat, and you've got your 10 weeks. So you've got, as you say, your spicy, your comfort. So I can kind of have a bit of a say in how I feel.
Well, exactly that. You should be able to flick through and say to yourself, right, I feel like this is going to be the week ahead. And hopefully, there'll be weeks that you don't like, maybe. Hopefully there's not, but there'll be weeks that you prefer to others, maybe because of the longer cooking time. So hopefully that should be, you know, how you start planning your week. I need your address to send you the book.
Okay, we can make that happen. Or I'll just come round and pick it up when you've got some gravy on the go.
On Sunday.
And I'll do some burpees with Nick.
It's amazing how many people pop over on a Sunday.
Also, your Yorkshire puddings look huge.
Yeah, I do like a big Yorkie.
I do think that Yorkshire puddings should be filled with gravy. That's also a thing of mine.
I did that with that's what I do with the toad in the hole.
Oh,
that holds it all as a cylinder of gravy until you cut into it.
Right, okay, I'm salivating, listeners. The link for the book is obviously going to be in the show notes, which can be found wherever you are streaming and downloading this episode. Ian's YouTube channel, the links will be in the show notes, as will your social handles, including Hayes House.
Yes.
Where you can see the innovations, elbow pads as knee pads, was it the fan as an irrigation system?
You know that wasn't mine, don't you?
Oh, was it not?
No, that wasn't mine. Can you imagine? That would have electrocuted me.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I just thought that's so clever.
I had 300 comments.
Oh.
It was bonkers.
You're going to end yourself. Yes. Right. But yeah, if you want to look at home renovations, all of that kind of stuff, all of the links will be in the show notes. Ian, I'm so glad that we did this. And I genuinely, not just blowing sunshine in an area because I know Nick and think the world of Nick, but I genuinely think this is a genius idea.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you enjoyed that chat with Ian. Before you go, I just wanted to say that if you do want to get in touch with me, which would be delightful, I do love hearing from you, just email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or slide into my DMs on Instagram or Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. And if you want to have a conversation with me and other listeners of the podcast, then click the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you're streaming and downloading this episode, and join the Facebook group Answer Two Questions, and you can have chats galore with your fellow podcast listeners and with me. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you on the next one.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.